Accession number 3025, reel 4.
That sounds incredibly difficult if you're trying to be so precise.
Yeah, because once you've gone into manoeuvre, your main AI, or main AI, or your direction indicator, your compass wouldn't be there anymore. So you'd have to be visual cues all the time. That's what it used to be, and that was a bit of a mare at times. But that's how you have to have it. And you'd be watching each other all the way through, making sure that you knew that he couldn't see you in certain manoeuvres, so you're the safety man then. And then vice versa, he'd become the safety man, so he would have to avoid you, you would have to avoid him in certain bits of the manoeuvre, and that's how it worked out. Because you'd lose visual contact with each other. So you'd have that, and then we'd bring the team together in probably 4 ships, and we'd fly around and just, as a whole team, changing formations, you know, echelon port, echelon starboard, line astern, and then if you've got various manoeuvres you're going to put into your display, like Diamond or Concorde. Or I used to have several different shapes of the display team. And we just call them, if they look like Concorde, for instance, the shape of Concorde, we'd call it Concorde. And it would just be maybe the links leading with the 4 gazelles in a staggered sort of staggered arrowhead, which looked like the shape of Concorde. You know, and it was just something like that. That's how we'd call them. Or I put myself in the rear with a gazelle either side of me and 2 gazelles in front, and that would be, I think that was Concorde, I think. And then we'd have Diamond, which would be links in the centre and 4 gazelles, one forward, one aft, one either side of you. And I used to loop out that formation on various manoeuvres. So we'd practice all of the formations and changes of formations. Bearing in mind, you want to get somebody from one side to the other safely as possible, or as slick as possible, and it looks good to the people on the ground. It's also the most obvious thing is safe. Safety was always the primary aim, regardless of, you know, pleasing anybody. Safety was first. You always had safety first, and you always had to make sure that you'd change your formation. Everybody knew exactly where they were going, how they were going to do it, so you wouldn't cross in front of somebody unnecessarily, or you weren't jeopardising the safety of somebody else by changing formation. That's what we used to practice all the time. That was maybe a week of just doing that, just to get it all right, you know. Maybe longer, depending if we gelled. That was the other thing. Major thing was gelling with the team, having confidence in the guy. And if you lost the confidence in one guy in the team, it'd be a knock-on effect. So you had to build up confidence in everybody, and instill safety in everybody. So everybody's thinking safety, thinking confidence, thinking about everybody. That was a big thing. But if you had one manoeuvre, say, and somebody did something wrong, the next time you're doing that manoeuvre, you'd be hesitant, or you'd be, you know, you didn't want that. So that's why we used to go practice to get it. I mean, every now and then we'd have a bit of a scare, but I mean, that's part of display flying. I mean, you couldn't do anything about that. But yeah, after that, and then we'd get the display together. We'd be briefed on how the display was going to be run from start to finish, and then we'd do it in sections. So you'd practice one part of the display, what you were going to do, and then break it off and do that 20 times. Then you do another part of the display, and you do that 20 times. You do another part. And then you'd join 2 of them together and do that. Then you join 3 of them together and 4. So you've got the full display, and that's how you'd do it. So it would all gel together. Bearing in mind, at the end of all the training, all the practice, everything else, we had a display of, say, 12, 14 minutes was our maximum display, because you were limited to display time and shows. People didn't want you there too long, didn't want you there too short. You know, so you had to have normally 12 minutes was an ideal display time for us. And you went through all that.
It's extraordinary.
Yeah. And then you practice the display till you've got that display. Absolutely. Bearing in mind, you go and try out, and it's complete cake and arse, really. Sorry. But you find out that's not going to work. So you've got to go back to the drawing board. And we had whiteboards as big as, you know, a hanger wall sort of thing, and plastic stick-on aircraft, and you'd be walking through with them on the board, and you'd be talking through.
You could get involved in actually designing programs?
Yeah. Well, the team leader used to... put the display together. It was his job to put the display together, and he would do all the what's the posh word you use in choreography. he would do all the rest of that as well, because we'd have music to it. We couldn't hear the music, by the way, just the crowd. So it was, you know, we used to play. We used to display to A Kind of Magic, Queen, which was great when you watch the display on video and listen to the music of the people. It was fantastic. You know, it's A Kind of Magic, cracking up. And I tried to get on the 2002 team. I tried to get Robbie Williams. Let Me Entertain You. That's what I wanted, but I was sort of shot down. I wasn't allowed. I think Robbie Williams wouldn't have minded. It was just the fact that the manager of the team at the time wasn't particularly keen in changing the music. So I wanted to change it to Let Me Entertain You, which would have been fantastic. But no, so the team leader does all the choreography, he does all the display. But he's also open to suggestions, and he's open. And, you know, we sit down and go through, and we think, well, you try and keep the manoeuvres as simple as possible, but as dynamic as possible, so you're not jeopardising safety for starters is the first thing. But you don't want something boring for people. You want something exciting. So when we go through the display, you'd say, well, hang on a minute, I'm not particularly keen on that bit because it doesn't look right, or this, that, and then. And then you'd go through it, and that's how we'd do. And we'd go out to try it, come back in, and we'd chat through it. And in the end, we'd end up with a display. And that's how it used to go. But the main role of the team leader is obviously he's the team leader, and he would design the display. And then we'd fine tune it till we got it right.
Can you talk me through a typical display?
Well, we used to start off. Your display starts from the time you call for clearance to display. We used to, if you're flying into an airfield to start your display, it's not easy.
Why is that?
Because if you're out on a hold somewhere 2 or 3 miles away, and they call you in, you've got to jostle for position or whatever to get in there, and then start a display from a position from the airfield, it's not very good. If you're just going to start a display flying in from as a full team together, that's not too bad, because you're about 30 seconds from someone, say, a start line, and they say, right, clear the display, and you say, Roger, clear the display, and they give you a time, any 1 minute or 30 seconds, so you're happy with that. So you can get over a start line and fly straight in with a formation and then start your display from there. That's not a problem. But if you want to do some dynamic from both ends, coordinating a split team, or the team maybe in threes, it's difficult. So I prefer to start from the airfield. We'll be displaying, so we'll be on the ground, and they'd say, well, you're ready to display, yeah, fine, how long, 1 minute start line, and they say, right, and they would clear us to the start point. And I used to go down to the far western side, say, for instance, it was a north south east west runway, and I'd go far west, and the four gazelles would start off out of the shot of the crowd, and I'd be on the ground, and they'd clear us to display. I'd come into the hover facing backwards, the four gazelles would be a diamond, and they'd be flying towards me. I'd fly backwards 70 knots using features on the ground, initially the compass, but I'd lose that very quickly. I'd level off at 300 feet, bearing in mind the guy in the left hand seat, he's calling figures out to me, you're coming at 300 feet, so you hold the climbing, and he'd be counting the speed, because he'd lose the speed on the computer, because if you went backwards it wouldn't compute it very well. So you'd say, yeah, 60 knots, 6 knots, 70 knots, you're right, 70 knots, okay, and you'd hold it. So I'd come backwards at 70 knots, they would be coming at me at 90, 100 knots. So we had a closing speed of 160 knots. So, but we're also aiming just so you're with a centre person in the display line, or the VIP in the centre enclosure, sitting there with your ice cream. You were the centre person, so we were displaying to the crowd centre. So we went across on crowd centre. So the gazelles would adjust their speed to cross. So I would go through the centre then backwards. They'd be all nicely tight, you know, at the crowd centre, as close as we could.
That's just extraordinary.
And I'd go backwards, and as I went through, the gazelle, the top gazelle, it would be the caller, he'd go, links, go. And as I went through, I'd then just nose forward, just a smidgen on the control, and it would flick me up, so I would then be going up, with tail up, to the crowd, on crowd centre. And they'd go, obviously go away, because I'd gone through them. And then I'd go right up, nose down 90 degrees, then down, and follow them through. They would then split up into various, wherever they're going to go. What normally would happen, would two would continue that way, two would break off south. I would then continue flying at them, they would move out of my way or descend. I would do a wing over, pedal turn it, come back in 270, go out. Out again, another wing over the far end, back in, come in, a loop, out. By this time, two gazelles would be coming down that way, coming towards us, right behind each other, so you couldn't see them. They'd have smoke and smoke on smoke on go, as they called the smoke. I would then come back into crowd centre, face the crowd. I would then turn away from the crowd and I would climb up to 800 feet. And then the two gazelles would come straight along at about 300 feet, and right up each other's backside, very close, with the smoke going. And they'd go heart go, and they would then go smoke a heart in the sky and then cross over underneath and back out. I would be in the top back flip through and go through the heart. That was the part of the start. That stage, we've now got three aircraft going away from the crowd, and then from crowd right or crowd left, whatever, two gazelles would come running in with smoke on. They'd do Elphisto loop, say for instance, with smoke on, and go out the way. The two gazelles that went out that way would have pedal turned back, and then they would come back in running towards the crowd. I would then go into depth. I would do a pedal turn, come back towards the crowd. The two gazelles would break away. I would come in, eagle roll it out. Two gazelles were then coming in from the right, because they'd already gone out to the left, to the right, but they'd be coming back in now. And they would do a 2-7 wing over and go out on crowd centre, so they're in depth. I would then do another pedal turn, come in, 270 wing over, out, follow them two out. The other two gazelles had broken off, would then come in towards each other, and as they went towards you, they would then do two wing overs and back out past each other in front of crowd. They would go off. They would then meet up with the other two gazelles way out of crowd shot. I would then come in. I would do a loop on the way in. As I went in, I'd pedal turn in front of the crowd, back out again, up. I'd then turn side on to the crowd so they could see me, and then back flip it so they've seen it side on rather than just tail on, so they can see the aircraft going over, because a lot of people said it didn't happen.
Did they?
Yeah, they didn't believe. They couldn't, because they looked at and see me backflip that way. They said, oh, I didn't. And they said, oh, I went upside down. No, you're not allowed. They can't do it, and all the rest of it. They'd always doubt it. So in our display, I'd put it side on so they could see it going over that way as well. They would go out. Oh, no, as I was climbing up, they'd be watching me going up. The four gazelles would come running in from crowd left, and they would do a thing called the corkscrew, which they were right up each other's backside, 1, 2, 3, 4, and they all do a 360 route. So they're all in a circle going out. Right, I mean, very, very close, all watching each other come around, and I would then backflip and pull them out. And we'd go all the way around, back into crowd centre. The two gazelles either side of me would come up, we'd land, well, we wouldn't land, we'd get on the 240 metre line. And then I would bow. That would be the end of the display.
That's just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
All going. So let's say everybody knew where they should be. And, you know, you're talking seconds, obviously, because everything had to feed in. You had to always try and keep some at crowd centre, because you didn't want people going for a burger break, and that was a big thing. If you had a big gap in any of the display, the people would say, oh, you got a burger break there, because people would lose interest very quickly. They go, oh, what's happening? Oh, they're over there, or they're down there. They wouldn't, oh, yeah, come get a burger. Oh, they come back in again. You know, and that's what we were trying to avoid, and that was in a known thing on all the briefs was, you know, don't get any burger breaks. And we'd always take the Mickey, like, for instance, we had the historical aircraft flight, which is the Scout, the Gazelle, sorry, the Scout, the Sioux, the Oster and the Beaver. They used to, and the G4 and the Alouette. And we always rivaled between us, because here we were historics and we were the main display team. And we always I brought me barbecue, I'll have a burger break when you do your display, because they were so slow. And it wasn't, they were slow aircraft, but they did a pretty good display, a cracking display, but they always have a bit of rivalry, but antagonists. I remember we were up in Lucas, Scotland, and we were going to do our display. They were doing their display not long after us. But I went to the burger stall, and we got a burger and put them on all their seats. So when they come to the aircraft, they had a burger on their seat, and they knew exactly who it was.
That's mean.
But no, No, it's my flyman's maneuver. On the second, on the 2002 year, they wouldn't give us a link, so we couldn't have a link because of operational commitments. So we had four Gazelles that year. So I flew Gazelle as team leader that year, which was a little bit different, trying to entertain a crowd with four Gazelles. I tried to get five Gazelles because it was just a good number, but they wouldn't allow me to have five. I only have four.
So how did that impact on the display?
Well, every time you landed, people said no links. Everybody wanted the links, and that was the big thing about flying the links. But we put a good display together, and you know, you just got to accept the fact that operational commitments, we couldn't have the links that year. But it was, I mean, a big impact, because people, first thing people said, where's the links? And they always looked forward to the links, and then that was a good thing. And then in 2003, which was my final year, I persuaded them to give me a links that year. So I flew the links on 2003. It was just absolutely fantastic. And I left the army in 2003.
So yeah. tell me about the support team. Tell me about who else is involved. You mentioned having someone in the left hand seat.
In the links, we have a left hand seat. Well, because the links is flown with two crew, so you always have somebody in the left hand seat. Traditionally, it used to be the person who was going to go in the right hand seat the next year. That was the normal. So when you're going to volunteer for the links display team, you have the guy that was displaying, he would probably leave the next year, and the guy in the left hand seat, he would move across to the right hand seat, and then you put him in the left seat. But he was down. You're obviously monitoring all your temperatures and pressures, making sure you're not over talking engines or whatever, and speed, to be calling out speeds, which were obviously something you needed to know, because if your eyes are out looking for aircraft, you can't concentrate on the speeds. Saying that, meaning the Gazelle you had to, because you're a single crew, but you know, you're always looking inside, and he would be shouting things out for you, especially if you're going backwards. I mean, you couldn't do much going backwards, you couldn't see anything. So you relied upon the team to obviously guide themselves onto you. If you were slightly swift off and going sort of, you know, 085 heading backwards instead of going 090 backwards, you'd be going off. They would just adjust themselves. So it wasn't, the crowd wouldn't know. They would just see this team, you know, doing this fantastic manoeuvre, but they didn't realise we were working out an agile off, you know, to get things right for them. That was the big thing, you know. And we'd have some really, you know, bad mistakes that you just cover up just through experience. And
what kind of thing?
Well, I actually at Biggin Hill, when we had the four Gazelles, I went to the wrong end of the start line. The reason was because it was our first display. You're just getting so used to flying up and down the lines at Middle Wallop, you know. And then all of a sudden, we're there at this airfield, there's the runway line, all the rest of it. And it was three Gazelles in a diamond, and I was the solo Gazelle. Same thing start, but we were flying through each other like that, just for speed and panache and all the rest of it. And because of the very first display, and because we'd done it all the time, Middle Wallop on, I used to go at the left-hand side and the right, blah, blah, blah. That was it, every time. As soon as I got the runway, I went to the left-hand side as per normal. But the crowd was a little bit round. So where I should have went there, I went to the other side. Just purely because it was our very first display, and I looked down and I thought, there's something wrong here. And the Gazelles called me up and said, running in. And I said, yeah, Roger, running in. And I was looking, I said, can't see you. And they said, are you at the end of this runway? And I went, yep. And I said, okay. And they'd started their running. So all I did then was just drop the nose down, scurry down this line as fast as possible. I mean, everybody saw me. They thought it was part of the display, me hoofing down the runway. Absolutely, it's faster to get this aircraft to go. And at the other end, I just pulled it all the way up, flipped it over, back in. So I was running in the right direction. And it worked out perfect. But it was just the fact that I'd gone to the wrong end. And obviously, it's my fault. One big cock up. And I just said, I mean, Julie Wiles, who was at Eagle 2, she came in the engine. He sat in front of us. And I said, what? And immediately I knew I was at the wrong end. Oh, no. And I thought, and then it was a case of thinking on your feet very, very quickly, get this aircraft moving. So, boom, down I went. Back in. Yeah, that was very good.
So we were talking about support, weren't we? So you've got your guy on the left-hand side.
Left-hand side. In the Gazelles, you've only got single pilot. They're just relying on themselves. And then the Lynx, you've got obviously the two crew. Our ground support was supported by four civilians normally, and Greeny, and Greeny's electronics, and then three Blackies, which are airframes and engines. And they were there from the FBH helicopters, the civilians, who worked at Middle Wallop on a voluntary basis. And they came up with us in the support truck. We also had, obviously, a team of about five people who run the caravan, because it's a big display caravan. Because as soon as we displayed, we had to get to the caravan as soon as possible. Because, I mean, without blowing my own trumpet, we were in demand for people, for autographs, for photographs. It was where you were. We had our own groupies as well that followed us around from all over the place. It was a nightmare.
What were they like?
Just a nightmare. I mean, some of them were very, very nice people, but I remember seeing the same people on my first season. I thought, didn't you see that? Oh yeah, they follow us around, like, you know. And, oh my God, it was just a bit bizarre. We had too many people sort of following us around.
Is there a fan club?
Yeah, there was a full fan club. We had our own website, big website. We had the Blue Eagles fan club, which was started in 2001. We had lots and lots of people. It turned turtle because there was a bit of a conflag between the interest of the army and logos and all sorts of stuff. It became they actually started the Blue Eagles PLC, the public company, and then the army said we couldn't do it and this couldn't happen and we couldn't do this because we had lots of funds coming in. It was managed correctly. But it was managed correctly, and it was good, but it was a bit of a problem with the military, what do you call that bloody people? Media ops. They were not happy that it was a PLC and we were using logos that were army logos. But it was all to do with, it was protection of the Blue Eagles logo that was done for initially. It wasn't done out of badness or malice or anything. It was done purely for protection. But it was done incorrectly by the person who started organising all the bits and pieces, and that's why the army were a bit up in arms about it. So they actually turned turtle the following year, and we lost the Blue Eagles club because of that. But it was still a good thing. But we had thousands and thousands of people support us, always getting hits on the website, always sending us messages. And say, there's about 20, 30 people who turned me every show we went to. It was a bit of a mare, really.
So you'd make a break for the caravan?
Yeah, as soon as we landed and the display was over, bearing in mind, the first thing was flight safety, so we debriefed the display. Regardless of where we were, if it was raining, blowing a gale, as soon as we left the aircraft, I'd get them all together and we'd debrief and we'd go through every manoeuvre we'd done. Was this all right? Was that all right? Any major flight safety implications or problems? No. Okay, then let's go. And we'd always do that. Bearing in mind, you'd always brief prior to the display. You'd dirt dive a display every single time. If you did it twice a day, three times a day, you'd still dirt dive it and you'd go through every manoeuvre. So you'd walk the ground, you know, you'd do your display. So I'd walk along with my left-hand seat man on. We'd put our helmets on the ground. They were all the points on the ground. So, you know, crowd left, crowd out, crowd centre. And we'd walk through the display. And we'd be calling all the moves that was going on the radio. You'd call them on the ground. You'd talk yourself down to your right. Pulling up, go. And, you know, your next thing, you'd say, Gazelles, go. You know, because they'd be coming in. Because you'd be calling their cue. And then the team leader of the Gazelles at that phase would ask for the smoke on, go. So they'd put the smoke on. And they'd all go through manoeuvres if they were flying the aircraft and pulling a little smoke. And we'd dirt dive all the way through to the end, you know. So that was done every single time, and debrief every single time. But the primary aim then was to get to the caravan, meet and greet the people, all the punters and supporters of our team, and sell the Army Air Corps to the public.
Did you enjoy it?
Oh yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, it was probably, you know, the best thing you can do with your pants on, really. You know? It was really, really good, excellent. I loved it. It was a bit of an eye-opener initially on the first season, because I didn't realise how famous, you're going to put it that way, you became very, very quickly, you know. And I was a legend within a couple of weeks because I was the display pilot of the Lynx. And people come straight up, was the Lynx pilot? Oh, yeah, great photograph. And it was just fantastic, you know. It was great, absolutely. And the other good thing is we went to shows where our families were, or like I come from the northeast, and then I went to the Sunderland Air Show and my family turned up. It was just fantastic. You know, so years ago, I'd in a local, it was local boy makes good and all this, you know, joined the army. And then to have this again, to go back up there as the team leader of the Wizards play team, was just fantastic.
What did your family think?
Oh, they were chuffed a bit. I mean, you couldn't ask for anything better. The fact that there was this fantastic display team, all our, I mean, the suits were designer suits. You don't see the real suits. I mean, they were beautiful flying suits, designed and made for individually and all the rest of it, and logoed up, and you look like some sort of racing driver of Formula One, really. But no, it was fantastic. Crowd response, admiration for you as the display pilot, regardless of which, if you flew Gazelle or Lynx. It was just absolutely awesome, really. I loved communicating with the people. I always made time, regardless if it was raining, blowing a gale. I would try my utmost to make sure we had time for the public. Nothing worse than, oh, let's go. Because I saw this at Festival of Speed down at Goodwood with a couple of racing drivers who, to me, you know, sort of blocked a couple of people off. And there's this person trying to get an autograph or whatever. I just started speaking for you. I haven't got time, sorry. And I thought, no. And I always said to myself, I would never do that. And I always made time to speak to the public, and that was one big thing. And I always made sure that my team did the same thing as well. You never pushed anybody away. You never said, sorry, can you come back later? Unless it will obviously go into a display and make a time, then we'd just say, sorry, I'm on display time. I've got to go. I'll be back here at whatever time, and I'll see you then. You know, we wouldn't sort of palm them off for any other reason. But yeah, but it was good.
What was the team like?
In what respect?
In terms of camaraderie and how you work together, and I mean, we talked a bit about having confidence in people. But
oh no, it was good. I mean, you built up this massive friendship and everything between each other. You had your ups and downs. Don't get me wrong. I mean, you still had your little bits of, you know, disagreements now and then. But that might have been, you know, we'll be away from display. We'll have nothing to do with display. When you're in display mood. You took out social cassette, you took out every other cassette, you put in display cassette, and that was in, you know. So it was, display cassette was in, and get on with it. When you came off, I mean, for instance, you'd have some heated arguments because of somebody cocking up. Minor cock-ups, but, you know, what do you call them? Crazy Ivans, we used to call them. Had one particular guy, I won't mention his name in case it comes out on tape sometime, but he used to crowd watch. And he was Lee Gazelle in front of me, and I had to maintain, just say for 120 knots, I had to keep that speed. And he'd be flying along leading the formation, I'd right behind him to do a loop out of this formation, and all of a sudden the speed started dropping back, because he'd be, oh, look at all the crowd. There's never a crowd of, say, 2 or 3 miles long, thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, and he'd crowd watch. I used to go bananas. You crowd watching? Get that speed on. We'd have a discussion. He said, I wasn't over there. He used to have that. Crazy Ivans would be other aircraft coming into to an area, or somebody would twitch. She said, for instance, a bird. You're flying in formation, and they'd see a bird, and they'd twitch. They wouldn't go up too far, they just would twitch. But everybody, whoa, you know, and then you'd break away from formation because you know, smack into them. And it's a knock-on effect, because if you're behind him, he's behind you, and one's behind there, and he's pulling it, and you're pulling it in front of each other, you know? So you've done one little twitch, he thinks you're coming at him, he's got to pull, and Constantine's all the way down, so, yeah, Crazy Ivans, nightmare. But, the team comradeship was second to none, and it was, you know, never leave your wingman sort of thing. And we used to have some nice parties.
Really? What kind of parties?
Well, I mean, after shows, or we'd go to Lord Mayor's dinners and all sorts of stuff, and they would always want them in flying suits. We couldn't sort of dress up in sort of tuxedos or look the part. We'd have to go in flying suits, and I used to take the Mickey out of the Yanks and stuff like that. Terrible man. But then,
what was that?
typical. I mean, no, I can't really say. The Yanks for the A-10s, especially with them. Shot our own people in the various conflicts. So, I mean, I remember walking through Fairford, and the A-10 crew just turned up. And as they walked past us, I said, A-10s, take cover, and all dived on the ground, and all they went bananas. Went in this minibus, and it was all the A-10 pilots. the role going, look, British, had a little Union Jack, so I'm like, British. Yeah.